Dear Ruth, the army has been keeping us on the run, but there's not a day that passes when I am not thinking of you. I miss you, and cannot wait for this war to be over. I'm ready to come home.
Mark my words, that will never happen. Is the carriage ready?
Yes, sir.
Then let's go.
But, sir...
Are you deaf? Move on, Johnny. Move!
Welcome to the Misfits audio presentation of December Twine. 1923 was a year of prosperity in America, so much so that many took the time to travel for the holidays. No destination was more prominent in the minds of Americans than Florida. This was a near tropical paradise with plenty of land. Bypassing a white Christmas in favor of sunshine and blue water was a thrilling notion. Our story takes us to Merritt Island, Florida, and a small spot on the map known as Angel City. Wesley Sutton had lived in Angel City for nearly 20 years. In that time, a boarding house was lovingly built to share his affection for this barrier island. A self-avowed bachelor, Wesley ensured his time and attention rested with his guests' needs. Perhaps this was what allowed him to excel in hospitality. Listen closely and you'll hear two stories that eventually intertwine. Primary story takes place in December of 1923. The other? Well, much earlier, as demonstrated in the opening of the show. We rejoined the story in 1923 with Wes Sutton and his housekeeper, Cora Jimenez, waiting one last night before the arrival of guests.
This is WRAP. We break from tonight's music to bring you an important announcement from the President of the United States, Calvin Coolidge.
Until we can reestablish a condition under which the earnings of the people can be kept by the people, we are bound to suffer a very severe and distinct curtailment of our liberty. These results are not fanciful. They are not imaginary. They are grimly actual and real, reaching into every household in the land. They take from each home annually an average of over $300, and taxes must be paid. They are not a voluntary contribution to be met out of surplus earnings. They are a stern necessity. They come first. It is only out of what is left after they are paid that the necessities of food, clothing, and shelter can be provided and the comforts of home secured, or the yearnings of the soul for a broader and more abundant life gratified. When the government effects a new economy, it grants everybody a life pension with which to raise the standard of existence. It increases the value of everybody's property and raises the scale of everybody's wages. One of the greatest favors that can be bestowed upon the American people is economy in government.
A brief but auspicious reminder from the President of the United States. Here's to economy in government, Mr. President. This is WRAP. And we now return you to the music of John Steele. A pretty girl is like a melody.
I have an ear for music.
Well, hello, Evelyn. I think Cal is keeping you too busy down at the store.
I was on my way home, and I knew your guests were arriving tomorrow, so I wanted to make sure you had all the produce you needed.
Cora?
Yes, Senor Wes.
Evelyn has all the things you told me you needed for the kitchen for the next few days.
Except for eggs.
Except for the eggs.
I am not deaf, Senor Sutton. She is standing a key. Right there.
Just wanted to make sure.
You're just in time, too, Miss Evelyn. We have guests arriving mañana tomorrow.
Oh, Miss Cora, someday you will teach me how to make the perfect tortilla.
You should make a harder request. tortillas are very simple, no?
If you say it is true, then I will have to believe you.
I say so. Gracias, Miss Evelyn. Thank you.
You're welcome, Cora. I should be going. If you need anything else, Mr. Sutton, please let us know. It is no trouble to drop by. Besides, I love talking to Cora.
She does have the gift of jaw flapping.
That is it. You can cook your own meal tonight.
You know you couldn't run the Suttons' house without her.
The trouble is, she knows it.
Good night, sir. We'll get fresh eggs in the morning. I'll make sure to bring some by.
We would be grateful.
Lieutenant Sutton, new orders just arrived, sir.
Thank you, Private. Any mail?
Here you are, sir. Excuse me, sir?
That will be all, Private.
Yes, sir.
Signor Wesley? Signor Wesley? It's time to go to Titusville to pick up our guests.
Goodness, I've lost all track of time. They should be arriving by train in an hour. I'll be back by noon. Have some of those sandwiches you made ready when we get back.
They are already made. Everything is ready and in the icebox. We just need our guests.
Thanks, Cora. What would I do without you?
Sit around wondering who will make food.
Titusville Station, coming into Titusville.
Oh, Daniel, this is our stop. You know, dear, it seems like forever since we got on board this train.
True enough, dear. I wonder how we'll know this Wesley Sutton character.
I never thought of that.
Here, dear, let me carry that.
Thank you, Daniel.
Oh, pardon me.
Nah, see, Anita, we aren't the only ones getting off in Titusville.
Where are you folks going?
The Sutton House in Angel City.
What do you know about that? I'm heading there, too. My name's Bobby May, from Illinois.
Daniel and Anita Sanders, from Vermont. Nice to meet you, Bobby.
Train departs 5 minutes.
Perhaps we should continue this conversation on the platform.
Looks like we're the only ones getting off.
Well, that should make it easier then to find Mr. Sutton.
Welcome to Florida, ladies and gentlemen. I am the proprietor of the Sutton House. My name is Wesley Sutton, and I'll be your tour guide as well. For instance, did you know that Titusville was almost named Riceville? But a spirited game of dominoes between Colonel Henry Titus and Captain Clark Rice settled the naming in 1873? Rice lost.
I wonder how many towns have such a colorful beginning.
That is peculiar.
And precisely why I do not play dominoes.
Mr. Sutton, we shall get along famously, I think.
Now, when we get to Merritt Island, we will cross a beautiful new wooden bridge and head south again.
How long will it take?
We should be eating lunch within a quarter hour.
Then lead on, good sir, for we are famished, weary travelers.
Our guests have arrived.
to Sutton House. My name is Cora Jimenez. You are Daniel and Anita?
That is true.
Your room is at the top of the stairs, first door on your right.
Thank you, Miss Cora.
Please do not worry about your luggage. Senor Sutton would bring it up for you.
I will? Oh, yes, I will.
And my room?
Is located at the end of this hall.
Thank you, Miss Cora.
You are most welcome. Now, we eat.
Mr. Sutton.
Please, call me Wes.
Wes, perhaps that name will become more familiar to me, but until then, please do not be offended if I refer to you as Mr. Sutton.
I will not take offense, madam.
Very good. Now, I was wondering, today is Saturday, which means that tomorrow there will likely be services at a nearby church. I was wondering if you could direct us to one so that we might worship.
Why, certainly. Let's see. The nearest would be Georgianian Methodist Church. I can drop you by the morning.
If it's no trouble.
It would be my pleasure.
Well, then it's settled.
I am not ashamed to admit that the train ride was long, and I am in need of rest. If you have no objection, gentlemen, I will retire until the evening meal.
And I shall venture out to see the beautiful waters of Florida.
Would you care for some company, Mr. Sanders?
Well, it would go a long way in ensuring I don't get lost among these beautiful trees.
Mr. May, would you care to join us?
Indeed, I would.
Mr. Sutton, I have the eggs I promised.
Evelyn, it's always a pleasure. Head on inside. Cora's in the kitchen. She will pay you for the eggs. Where are my manners? These are two of our three Christmas guests this year. This is Daniel Sanders from Vermont.
Pleased to meet you, young lady.
Why, thank you, Mr. Sanders.
And this is...
Bobby May, from Illinois.
Yes, well, I... It is very nice to meet you, Mr. May.
Please, I must insist you call me Bobby.
Well, I suspect we should begin our journey.
I absolutely agree.
Mr. May, you are joining us, aren't you?
I do believe I've changed my mind.
Perhaps another time.
Oh, Miss Ross.
You do understand that she can never know.
I understand perfectly, Mr. Pierce. But if I might be so bold, why would you give your right as grandfather away so freely?
Her mother is dead, and I despise the girl's father. The child will simply be a poor reminder of the worst decision my daughter ever made. Isn't it enough that I lost my daughter in childbirth? And whose fault is that, I ask?
I should not have brought up the subject, Mr. Pierce. I am sorry.
I wish to be very clear, Calvin. I never wish to see this child again, and I never wish her to know that she is anything other than your daughter. Are you certain you understand my wishes?
Indeed I do, Mr. Pierce.
Johnny, move along. My business here is done.
But she's your grandbaby, sir.
If you wish to keep your position, Johnny, you will learn when to keep your mouth closed. I am late. Move on.
Yes, sir.
Here, Evelyn, you should have some tea and one of my famous sopapillas.
Only if you have honey, Cora.
When have I ever been without? Besides, aren't you the one who keeps the pantry supplied?
I guess I do.
Well then, if there's no honey, there is only one person to blame.
What exactly is a sopapilla?
Here, try it.
This is fantastic.
See? One taste and they are trapped.
Cora, you always make me smile.
Mr. May, I cannot believe it is my sopapillas that keep you inside on such a beautiful day.
Well, I...
Perhaps you just enjoy my company. Or maybe it's something else.
Perhaps it is something else.
I am so surprised.
Miss Ross, would you give me the pleasure of a dance?
Excuse me, I really must be going.
Mr. May, I think you pursue like a toro. A bull.
You finally get to go home. You must have been good this year for Santa to convince the army to send you home.
Yeah, sure.
What are you gonna do now?
Good question.
What'd you say, Sutton?
I don't know. No, I do know. I'm gonna hold my wife, plant a kiss on her she'll never forget, and I'm gonna get on with my life. That's what I'm gonna do.
All right, Lieutenant Sutton, I'm not itching for a fight.
What went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, giving a nod, up the chimney he rode. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Bravo! What a delightfully fanciful story.
I couldn't agree with you more, dear.
Oh, do try, Daniel. I love it when he's agreeable.
I'm so pleased you enjoyed it, Mrs. Sanders.
What's not to love, Mr. Sutton? It's got a bit of humor, yet it seems like a real family. I was enthralled. Imagine catching Santa at work. Just lovely.
You know, I have been a closet writer myself for some time.
Really? You must tell us a story. And leave nothing out.
I am sorry. There are times my tongue has formed words my mind has not agreed to speak.
Well, now that the secret's out, who better to share it with than new friends?
I suppose. Most of my writing is composed of random thoughts and only served to amuse me. However, I too have a Christmas story I started last year.
I've always loved the written word. Would you share it with us?
I might be enticed to do so. However, I do not remember the exact words of my story.
Then at the very least, you must share the juicier bits.
It all started last fall, when I was out walking among the trees at dusk. I, too, was taken with Moore's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas' and his naming of Santa's deer. So when I spotted a buck in the woods, I paused, imagining him as part of Santa's team. I made no noise, because I wanted to look on this magnificent creature as long as possible. That being said, it was the snap of a twig that startled the beast, and as he turned to run, he rammed his head into a tree before he ever really got started.
My goodness! Was he all right?
Startled, to be sure, but he quickly disappeared from view.
Fascinating story, Mr. May. But how does this connect more firmly to Christmas?
Well, you see, it occurred to me that Santa uses his sleigh at night, and if one deer could discover trouble in the dark, then perhaps it could make things easier for St. Nicholas if he had a light. I recall saying that night, what if that deer had a light bulb for a nose? Wouldn't that be useful to Santa on his yearly errand? He could light the way.
Light bulb?
For a nose?
He seemed like a Reginald to me.
Reginald? The light bulb-nosed reindeer?
Well, it does seem a bit foolish now that it's been said.
Foolish? Not at all, my boy. I believe there may be something to your story. Please do keep working on it.
I don't know. It sounded so much better when I was the only one who thought of it.
promise me, young man, that you will share it. I believe this story will be important to your children one day. If it is, then you should share it with the world. Bobby, you will promise?
I promise.
Words we women love to hear. Now, we really should all retire so we can attend services in the morning.
I think I might find another way to occupy my time, Mrs. Sanders.
Suit yourself, Mr. May. But it will be the last service before Christmas. And I have it upon good authority that a Miss Ross will be in attendance.
Evelyn?
A good night, then, Bobby. Enjoy your day. Alone. That is, unless you change your mind. What an absolutely lovely service. Don't you agree, Bobby?
Yes, lovely.
I was, of course, referring to the service, but I suspect your mind was on someone with bright hazel eyes. And I'm not referring to Mr. Sutton.
If you'll excuse me.
He's not especially subtle, is he?
Not especially, Daniel. Although he does remind me of someone I know.
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, Daniel, you were once just like young Bobby. Only it was I who held your attention then.
You still do, Anita. You always have.
Mrs. Sanders, I brought those corn husks along with the eggs yesterday.
You're a perfect angel, Evelyn.
Do you mind if I ask what they're for?
I don't mind you asking, but I have no intention of sharing my secret until later.
Would you look at that? We finally have a tree.
Of course, we want our guest to help in the trimming.
Which is why I have popped corn and I have cranberries.
Oh, Cora, they make perfect garland.
That is true. And if you're hungry, you can eat the decorations.
Oh, Cora, you're a pure delight.
Anita, do you remember making popcorn garland in Wyoming?
Indeed I do. That was just about the only decoration we could afford, but there were plenty of trees to choose from.
I am willing to confess confusion. I understood you were from Vermont.
Oh, we are. No mistake there. But when we were young, we had grand hopes of making our claim on homesteaders' land in Wyoming. Must have been the mid-1880s, I suppose.
We claimed a piece of land near Fort Laramie, built a cabin, planted trees, and then held on for as long as we could.
The winters were absolutely the worst I've encountered.
It was nothing like Angel City. Snow, ice, wind. Many neighbors died in the blizzard of 88.
That must have been difficult.
It was, Bobby. Our son David showed increasing signs of weakness, and we had very little money left.
I made the decision to head back home to Vermont in 1894. We made it back to Independence and then took trains further east.
David improved on the way home, but once we were back with family in Vermont, he took a turn for the worse.
I had no idea, Mrs. Sanders.
There's no reason you should have known, Bobby. David contracted polio. There was very little to be done.
Did you have other children?
No. We wanted a whole house full, but it was not to be.
However, we have always been blessed by meeting so many wonderful people.
And I do believe we have more friends than we deserve. I don't see Cora as a housekeeper, Evelyn as a grocer's daughter, Wes as an innkeeper, or Bobby as a storyteller. I see each of you as new members of my family.
Believe her. She'll be sending you letters asking for the latest news. She'll likely invite you to visit. She'll make a general nuisance of herself.
Oh, Daniel.
I can't imagine you ever being a nuisance, Mrs. Sanders.
Thank you, dear. but I suppose I can be a good and proper busybody when circumstances suggest an opportunity. It is time to bring me the corn husks, Cora. Did you put the dried husks in water as we discussed?
See, last night, Mrs. Anders.
Excellent. Then it's time for us to make decorations for the tree.
Out of corn husks?
Indeed, Bobby. We will make an angel for the top, stars to hang on the tree, and even a few corn husk dolls.
All with corn husk?
Well, we'll need a little twine to hold them together.
I have some in the shed.
Can I help you?
Master Ross, you may not remember me.
I am at a disadvantage. You seem to know me, but I'm not certain I...
My name is Johnny Miller. I was the coach driver for Master Pierce.
Oh, my. Please, come in. Coffee?
No, sir. I won't be long.
Has Mr. Pierce changed his mind? Does he want to take Evelyn back, then?
I don't expect that'll happen, sir.
How can you be certain?
Well, she's a right proper adult now, but even if she was just a youngin, truth is Master Pierce has gone on to his eternal reward, such as that may be. He sure enough had money, but inside that man was dirt poor.
Oh, I am sorry for your loss.
No need. He was about as brittle and bitter as they come. Might have been a blessed relief to breathe his last. No disrespect intended. Just a statement of lifelong fact.
So, why are you here?
An errand of mercy, I suppose, sir. Master Pierce kept every letter his daughter got from her husband off at war. But he also kept every letter she tried to send. Mrs. Sutton died thinking that her husband didn't love her no more. Or maybe he died.
Did you say Mrs. Sutton?
The young girl's mama.
Evelyn's mother.
Now that Mr. Pierce is gone, I believe the only justice I can bring is to pass on the letters to you. It's up to you what you do with them now. All I know is my soul has found relief in this delivery. Letters are wrapped in butcher paper and twine, sir. He asked me to burn them years ago, but I just couldn't do it. When he died, I knew there was nothing preventing me from setting things right. Well, here's the letters, Master Ross. I do hope they do some good.
Johnny, thank you.
No need to thank me. Just something I had to do. Wishing I could have brought them sooner. Well, I best be moving on.
Father, I'm back from the Suttons. You should see my corn husk angel. It's... Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know you had company.
Great God Almighty. She looks just like Ruth.
What? Excuse me, who?
So glad I came, Mr. Ross. It's up to you now. Good day, Miss Ross. Good day indeed.
Would I be out of line to ask who that was?
You have every right to know. He is the last living person to have seen your real mother before she died.
Real mother?
Dear, sweet Evelyn, there is no way to make you understand a past to which you have never been introduced. Please, take some time to read. Then we will talk.
Dear child, I love you. Never doubt that. You are the child of two people who discovered love through the most difficult circumstances. You see, your father left for war, never knowing you were coming. I haven't heard from him, and I fear the worst. The doctor tells me I will likely not survive the night. And if this is true, I leave never knowing you, and never knowing what has become of your father.
Mother?
Well into Christmas Eve, Evelyn read letter after letter, two souls yearning to be together, yet neither hearing the love the other tried to send. Dozens of letters shared the mundane parts of war, the hope for the future, the longing to be together, and the questions about why the other would not or could not respond. She came to know and love her real parents through words written on letters older than she. Evelyn didn't love Calvin and Clara Ross any less. She just found some satisfaction in knowing her past. Line by line, she was learning her parents' history, sharing in the heartache and the joys. She read the pleasure her mother felt in knowing that she was going to give birth. For Evelyn, this was the most important Christmas gift she had ever received. There was one man that Evelyn knew she had to see, one who would find healing in the story of loss, healing in the midst of truth.
How long have I known you?
As long as I can remember.
I watched you grow up and never knew you were my daughter.
I have always wondered why I enjoyed spending so much time here at the Sutton House.
And I thought it was my cooking.
Cora, this is a private conversation.
Is it private if I can hear it?
Bring your tea and come in.
Is everything all right? I thought I heard crying.
It was just Miss Cora.
I'm okay now. He let me out of the kitchen.
Anita, are you downstairs?
Yes, Evelyn's here.
The only person missing is Bobby.
I've just been waiting for an invitation.
See, I am not the only one, Senor Sutton.
Are we intruding?
Well.
Absolutely not. I've just received the most remarkable news.
And since it's officially Christmas morning, even if it's only by a few minutes, we would like to share our joy.
Joy shared among friends is an incredible blessing.
I was listening from the kitchen, and what I know is that Mr. Sutton has a daughter, and Evelyn knows who it is.
And that is why you should never get just one part of the story, Cora.
That is true. It leads to all kinds of gossip.
Gossip? I never. What did I miss?
I am his daughter.
No wonder you have his eyes. I am so happy for you.
But how? I mean, can you?
The questions would come and answers would follow. On an early Christmas morning in 1923, a daughter found her father. Like that very first Christmas, good news had been delivered to an out-of-the-way place in an unassuming package, but that gift changed everything. You see, Mr. Pierce had moved Evelyn's mother away from Merritt Island the morning after Wes had gone to fight in the Spanish-American War. No one in Angel City knew that Ruth Sutton was expecting. Very few even were aware that she and Wes had married. When Ruth passed away following childbirth, Mr. Pierce gave her baby girl to the newest citizens of Angel City. They wouldn't know Ruth, and they wouldn't know Wes. They just felt overwhelmed at the idea of having a child of their own. The guilt of what he knew led Johnny Miller to help in putting the puzzle together. His was a burden carried far too long. Calvin and Clara Ross graciously allowed Wes Sutton to become a part of a larger family, and Evelyn's love grew to embrace them all. There was no need to worry about what Evelyn's last name should be, Ross or Sutton, because in the months that followed, Evelyn agreed to become Mrs. Bobby May. Daniel and Anita Sanders enjoyed their stay in Angel City enough that they bought the land next to the Sutton House to build their own home. Cora stayed on as Wes Sutton's housekeeper and cook, and she finally taught Evelyn how to make a tortilla.
That's easier than I thought.
See, what did I tell you?
And in the years that followed, a man who once was considered a lonely bachelor found grandchildren crawling into his lap and wanting to know the story of one Christmas when a special angel named Johnny came with butcher paper and twine to make sure they had a third grandpa. Little Jonathan May thought it especially sad that not everyone had three. There would be difficult years ahead when the stock market collapsed and when World War II would ask two of Bobby and Evelyn's sons to fight for freedom. This was a reality for many Americans. But the happier ending, discovered once upon a Christmas, provided just enough hope to believe something good can always come from the darkest days. They had all seen it firsthand. Once upon a Christmas.
Mommy, why do we have a cornhusk angel on our tree every year?
You see that twine in the middle?
Yes, Mommy.
Sometimes God sends messages.
Angels?
That's right, angels. And they pull all the loose ends of a story together.
They must be special for us to put an old cornhusk angel on our tree.
Oh, they are. Now let's tuck you in. Christmas comes very early.
You've been listening to December Twine. We'd like to thank our cast. Garen Fitzgerald as Young Wes, Tom Chalker as Mr. Pierce, Glenn Haskell as Johnny, Jeff Ward as narrator, Brian Kelly as a radio announcer, Captain John Tatterzak as Wesley Sutton, Karen Heyman as Evelyn Ross, April Sadowski as Cora Jimenez, John Daynert as Soldier, Glenn Higby as Porter, Elise Krawick as Anita Sanders, John Specht as Daniel Sanders, River Kanoff as Bobby May, Peter Katt as Calvin Ross, Joe Pollock as Lieutenant Tanner, Alicia Ray as Ruth, and Chloe Daynert as a child. December Twine was written and produced by Glenn Haskell, executive producer Captain John Tatterzak. Music for this story was composed and performed by music existing in the public domain from the time period. Mixer is Mike Lewis, script editor Cheryl Collins, webmaster April Sadowski, art director Andrea Kuntz. This drama was written in recognition of the value of multiple generations in celebration of Christmas and the value of finding lost gifts. This production is for enjoyment purposes only. I'm your narrator, Jeff Ward. This is an original production by Misfits Audio, copyright 2012. All rights reserved.